This is Suzanne Ito for ACLU.org. Today, the ACLU renewed its legal challenge in federal court against the Departments of State and Homeland Security for denying a visa to South African scholar Adam Habib. Adam Habib is a political commentator and renowned democracy scholar at the University of Johannesburg, where he serves as the Deputy Vice Chancellor of Research, Innovation, and Advancement. He is also a Muslim who has been a vocal critic of the war in Iraq and certain U.S. terrorism-related policies. It appears that Professor Habib is a victim of ideological exclusion, the U.S. government's practice of denying visas to foreign nationals whose political views are not favored by the administration. The State Department refused to grant Habib a visa after months of inaction, claiming that he engaged in terrorist activities without providing a single piece of evidence to prove it. In court, the ACLU is now demanding that the government prove it has some legitimate basis for banning Professor Habib. We talked to Professor Habib from his home in South Africa about his case and how his exclusion from the U.S. has affected his life. What was your first reaction when you found out that the U.S. denied your visa by claiming you had engaged in terrorist activities?
Well, I think my first reaction was outrage. I mean, this is a very dangerous thing to do. I mean, labeling people terrorists without due reason can have people killed in some parts of the world. You know, I remember in the 1980s, in South Africa's liberation struggle, one of the worst features of it was that if somebody didn't like somebody else, you'd call them a impimpi or a spy. And there were large amounts of people that were falsely accused of that, and many people were killed for it. So it seems to me the same kind of thing. You know, I find labeling a dangerous thing. I think it's an outrageous thing to do.
Since you and your family spent so much time in the U.S. prior to your exclusion, how does this political action frame your views about the U.S.?
On the one hand, it does make me angry initially. But then, you know, I mean, when you think about it, you come to the realization that actually your relationship to a country can never be determined by a government, particularly by a right-wing government. I have lots of friends in the United States. I've got memories in the United States. I've studied in the United States. Fatima and I lived there for 3-4 years. We visited it on lots of occasions. Our attitude to the United States is informed by the kind of multitude of engagements we have with the United States. So I'm also aware of the fact, you know, it's sobering that as much as I've been denied entry into the United States by the American government, there are American institutions that are playing a significant role in defending my case. In people like you guys, the ACLU, the American Association of University Professors, the American Sociological Association, a number of NGOs. That it's American institutions that defend me as much as an American government that attacks me. And so that's worth bearing in mind. I think it also brings to me, you know, the need for progressives across the world to start aligning with each other. Whether you're Muslim, Jewish, Christian, whether you're American or South African, whether you're European or Latin American, that we need to be aligning together against reactionaries within all of these other groups. That we need to start transcending national and religious and ethnic boundaries in our fights against bigotry. And that's what this is an example of. That a lot of the people who defend me here are people I don't know personally. They've defended me on principle. They've defended me on the right for my voice to be heard. And that's fantastic. It seems to me that that's the lesson we should be learning from this.
What kinds of personal or professional ramifications have resulted from being unfairly stigmatized as someone connected to terrorism?
Well, it's inconvenient. I mean, I'm the Deputy Vice Chancellor of a university, and just the way the Global Academy is structured, probably the largest component of the Global Academy is located in North America. And not being able to go there then it impacts quite significantly on my ability to do my job. It impacts on my ability to interact with colleagues. It impacts on my ability to engage with ideas. What can I do about it? Well, I can get around it. I can get and make sure that my colleagues go instead of me, or they interact much more with institutions in the United States. The only thing that I'm lucky, that somebody I think said this to me from the ACLU a while back, is that this charge has been labeled at so many people now that it's become so common to accuse anybody you don't like of terrorism that now people are becoming very circumspect. They ask the question, is this true? Because if its government is not taken seriously, if it cries wolf so many times, if it makes the accusation so often that in other parts of the world they stop taking you seriously, then that compromises the United States. It compromises its integrity. It compromises its ability to maintain its security. It compromises the United States in a variety of ways.
Do you think it's ideological exclusion or the government keeping out people who are critics of U.S. policy that is preventing you from entering the United States? How does ideological exclusion affect debate in the U.S.?
You know, I think initially when this happened, I thought it was a mistake. And then I thought it was some form of racial profiling. And for a while, I thought that until, for instance, they withdrew the visas of my children and my partner, Fatima. And then it seemed to me that it couldn't be a question of mistaken identity. For a while, I thought it had to do with my anti-war engagements. I was involved integrally in the anti-war protests in 2003 in Durban, South Africa. And yes, I have written critically of the United States. I've written critically of my own government on a range of questions. So, you know, that's the only thing that I have left. It seems to me that it must be ideological exclusion. It can't be anything else. It's vindictive targeting of people that the administration doesn't agree with. And that's something that should be worrying. Does it have an impact in the United States? I think absolutely. I think the United States, if it doesn't listen to critical views, if it doesn't listen to views other than those that take place in the United States, it loses its integrity, it loses its innovativeness, it loses its abilities at a whole range of levels. Even before I got barred from the U.S. or deported from the U.S. in 2006, the last time I was there in 2004, I was quite struck by how debate had changed in the U.S. mainstream media. I cringed at times when I listened to CNN or Fox TV or whatever. But parts of it reminded me of actually very crude stuff, that the last of which I've heard was under the state of the emergency regulations in South Africa in 1986. I mean, I was quite struck by how propagandistic the media had become. And it seems to me that that's in part got to do with how the environment has changed, how ideological exclusions have begun to happen, how there's a difficulty with listening to alternative views. And that is sad, because I think the United States becomes the weaker for that. There's a part of the United States that has a very vibrant tradition, and that's the best part of the United States. The fact that peoples could come there and over 10, 15, 20, 30, 50 years transform their identities and become American and become part of a global humanity. And I think those wonderful aspects of the United States get eroded every time things like ideological exclusions happen. I think the United States becomes the weaker for it. And that's the real, real tragedy of these ideological exclusions.
How do you explain to your children the fact that the U.S. will not let you enter the country?
Well, it's difficult. Well, I've got to explain a bit more complicated. I've got to explain first that I'm excluded. But then I've got to explain that why were their visas summarily revoked. And that's something that is tricky. For a while, Irfan, my eldest son, was about 11 years old, and Zidane, 8 years old, were puzzled by this. They developed an anti-American attitude. And then what you've got to actually explain to them is that, no, listen, Americans who are defending us, they are American institutions and American individuals that are fighting the case. The one thing that worried me, I must say, is My children are becoming politicized too early. They've suddenly learned about exclusions. They've suddenly learned about governments excluding individuals. They're learning about rights being abrogated. And it seems to me that while there's a nice side to being politicized early, there's a dangerous side to being politicized early. You lose your innocence too quickly. You know, Bush has suddenly become a swear word in my household. They start looking and saying, look what's happening in Iraq, and see what the Americans are doing there, and they see it on TV, and they're immediately forming politicized views. And while some people might celebrate it, and even I celebrate it at one level, I worry about it at another, because it seems to me that an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old should not be as politicized as they are becoming.
Thanks for listening to this ACLU podcast. To learn more about Adam Habib's case and ideological exclusion, go to aclu.org/exclusion.